Well, we welcome in the professor as we finish up April. How are you, Ron Wotus? What's new?
I'm doing well this morning, Marty. Yeah, April's behind us. Let's win the game today, and we'll put April in the past.
You know, as we talk, you go through a six-month season. And, you know, look, last year you had the best record in the league. The second half of the season you had the worst record. So baseball is one of those meandering sports that goes here and there. And you can't get crazy early in the month. I'll tell you why I think. And that's because there's no reference point. You know, you haven't won 15 out of 20 yet to say, hey, we've played good ball, we can do it. Everything that people can look at says 9 and 16.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You've been saying it for years. It's 1 month. You know, there's plenty of time in the season to set the sails and get the ship guided to make adjustments here and guided in the right direction. Plenty of time to do that. And, you know, I'm wondering, you have the astrologist or astronomer. What's the
astrologist?
Andrea.
Uh-oh.
I wonder if she's listening because I'm wondering, you know, the moon can affect the tides. I'm wondering if the moon's having any effect on our ball club here, as we've been, not been able to really find our stride. We have, we've had injuries, we've had some strange things going on. But as we're saying, there's plenty of time to correct this and move forward. A lot of games left.
Yeah, I think the thing is Mercury is in retrograde, and I don't even know what that means.
Either do I.
But if that's the case, and Andrea, go back to sleep. It's okay. We don't want to wake you up this morning. All right. Hey, a couple of things though. Since last time we talked, Christian Arroyo was up here, so let's get the professor on. Let's talk about Christian Arroyo and the plays he's made at third. Let's talk defense first, then we'll talk about his offense. And you always told me the most important thing to look for is footwork and the infield, is you always want to see that footwork, which you see with Crawford and Panic all the time. Critique this young man a little bit, footwork in the infield and how he looks to you so far.
Well, you know, being a number one pick, it comes with a lot of expectation, and I think he's rose to the occasion and he's delivered. Defensively, here's a guy that came up as a shortstop, and as you know, if you can play shortstop, you can really play anywhere on the field, third base, second base, and that's what they had him doing down in the minor leagues. He was kind of moving around to different positions in case we did have an issue. He could come up and fill in at any of the spots. But his footwork is fine, and honestly, he's performed better than I anticipated, because it's not an easy step at 21 to come from the minor leagues and come to the major leagues at this point in his career. Now, he's played extremely well. There's a long way to go. I like his footwork. I like his knack for the ball. You know, I use the term baseball player, Marty, as you've heard over the years, but he's a baseball player. He figures it out, and he's got a nice calm presence about him out there, and that makes him a better player.
Yeah, calm presence. The play that the ball went off Kane, and he came in and made that play. That's calm presence, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's the character of the player. You know, regardless of what their physical ability is, you know, their mental capacity to slow the game down, they not get caught up in the bright lights. These are the things that have always impressed me about Christian, being around him the little bit I did in the minor leagues. And, you know, one of my confidants and one guy I rely on heavily in spring training is Joey Amalfitano. Mm-hmm. And Joey has always told me he loves this kid. The thing he loves about him is he loves to play the game. He's the first one on the top step when a team wins to congratulate a teammate. And these things go a long way, because your physical ability is only going to take you so far. So it's great to see him here in the major leagues and see these things in play.
Yeah, as a mature 21-year-old, and I'll ask you this, where were you at 21? Well, what were you doing at 21? Now, look, we've seen the picture of you in high school. It was on the internet last week. Allie, did you see this? Allie's here with us this morning. This is something that looked like out of Happy Days. You look like, one of the Happy Days characters. The hair was down to your shoulders.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going to just preface that. Where were you at 21?
Well, I was listening to Blue Oyster Colt and Jethro Tull and the rest of them. No, seriously, At 21, I played a full year at AAA. I started a season in AAA and got a September call-up to the major leagues, but had a full year at AAA under my belt. So it's impressive for this kid to not get a full year at AAA. And, you know, obviously he was put in this situation because of the injuries and the things that we've had happen here. But like I said, it's not an easy thing to step into, and he's done a fine job. So on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. You know, he went to short. He's made all the plays, and he's looked very good out there.
So 21, he's up here. The clubhouse couldn't be more comforting. We have Michael Mambrea, the employee assistance person in charge of that. We've got Bob Tewksbury. We've got everyone to make you comfortable. You got a nice pillow at night, and everything is good. You walk into a clubhouse as 21 and a Pittsburgh Pirate. What do you walk into?
Well, it's a little bit different. I mean, you're a little bit starstruck. Look, you know, you got guys that you're only 21 years old, and you have players that have been in a game for 15 years. You know, you have the Dave Parkers and the Bill Madlocks. You have all these names that you've seen over the years perform at the major league level. I think the good thing for Christian here is he's been to major league camp the last couple years, and I think it's a little different today. You are able to rub elbows with the major leaguers. He has a relationships with these guys. He knows them. So that alone puts you in a more comfortable position opposed to coming from the minor leagues, not having been in a major league camp, and all of a sudden you're thrust into the big leagues with all these great players that you've been watching on TV the past few years.
Now, did you have the shoulder length hair when you were 21?
No.
Still have it?
No, but you know, that was in when I grew up in the town that I grew up in. It was the long hair, and I had a scout for the New York Mets. He called me aside my junior year in high school, and he said, "Hey, look," he says, "you need to cut the hair. If you don't cut the hair, you're not going to get drafted." That's what he told me. Of course, I believed him, and the next day I went to the barber shop and I cut the hair off, and I got drafted. So I guess he gave me good advice.
Very fun. If you haven't seen it, it's on McCovey Chronicles. And you know, that just to take this a little further, they did a story about you in high school, and it sounds like you're the professor in high school. You're always that kind of kid who, you know, is supporting his teammates and all that?
Well, that's the way I grew up. I think a lot of us playing sports, right? It was about the team. It's not about yourself. You know, you just do the best you can. And, you know, that's the way I was brought up. I had great high school coaches that, you know, it wasn't about you. It was about the whole ball club. And I think that's the best way to approach things. It takes the pressure off yourself, too. Huh? Just be a piece of the puzzle and do the best you can do.
Were you the bench coach for the high school guy?
No, I was far from that. Listening to my coaches and just loved to play sports.
All right. It's Sunday morning with the professor. You got to see the picture. The picture is worth 1,000 words, I will tell you that. We had an interesting thing come up this week. I was a player from Lithuania on the Pirates. I don't know if you saw that, a pitcher. Then he was sent back down. And then a young man was brought up, Gift Ngope. Have you seen
him? Yeah,
I saw
him.
From Africa?
Yes.
The first 1.6 billion people in Africa. He's the first African to make it to the major leagues. And it's a great story. And, of course, the Pirates, the team that you came up with. What a story, huh?
It's unbelievable. You would think, because they play baseball around the world. You know, I myself have been to Ireland.
I'm going to talk to you about this.
To work with some of those guys. You know, European baseball is alive and thriving. I'm not every country. A lot of countries play baseball. But Africa, you would think that, you know, the athletes that they have down there, and just because of the population. But maybe it's equipment and things like that. Oregon, I mean, they're not playing baseball. But the first thing that comes to mind is this, you know, being the Pirates to get this kid. It's the same thing where they went to India. Right? Didn't they have the players? Was it a pitcher or first baseman from India? And they did the same thing. Got the first player from India to play in the major league. So they're obviously out there trying to find players wherever they can. We'll see how this kid does as we go along.
Kid was terrific. He got 3 hits against the Marlins, and he's good defensively. And he grew up in the clubhouse. His mother worked in the clubhouse in South Africa, and he was born there. And so he, when he got into professional baseball, he lived in the clubhouse because that's where he lived.
Really?
And when he got to Bradenton, you know, there's all the washing machines and all this stuff. And the kid just stayed around and, like, folded the towels.
Wow.
And they said, what are you doing here? He says, well, this is what I do. And an amazing story of going through the minor leagues for 9 years. And he gets up to the big leagues. He's playing in the major leagues, got 3 hits. The other night. So really, it's an amazing story.
It is. I'm curious to know how they drafted him, where they saw him, what scouts saw him, where did they say, hey, this is a kid we want to give an opportunity to. Was he playing cricket?
No, I'm going to tell you.
What sport? Okay, yeah.
Because you've done this, my next question to you. He went to a tryout camp in Italy.
Okay.
And someone saw him in Italy, and they signed him out of a tryout camp. He could run, and, you know, he had good hands and all that. They tried to make him a switch hitter and all this stuff, and he's a little infielder. But you've been to Italy, and you've been to different places. So I'm going to ask you this. They talk about baseball being in England next year, maybe having some games there, Mexico City. I went to Havana, and they say, well, in 10 years, you can have baseball in Havana. You've been around the world and seen baseball. Give me a country where you say, okay, maybe baseball could be in this country.
Well, I think the ones that you named, I mean, Italy, I've seen it. Obviously, the European baseball, the Netherlands has the best program. They've proven that time and time again, and the best manager in European baseball, and that's Bam Bam. And then as it goes, you know, the Italians are playing a lot of baseball. They're up there near the top. And then from there, it's kind of a shot in the dark. You know, I know they're playing baseball. They play in Poland. They play in the Czech Republic. They play it all over the world. So it's very interesting that the scouts can go out and find these guys, because that's what scouts do, right? They look at the talent. They look at the tools. Can he run? Can he field? Can he throw? Now, I don't know how they can evaluate if these guys are hitting or not, because they're probably not seeing a whole lot of them.
Yeah.
But if the tools are there, and you can push them into the minor leagues and have them start playing every day to develop those tools, anything's possible.
Yeah, I say Italy. Honestly, and the major leagues have put a lot of time into Italy, a lot of clinics in Italy.
No doubt, and they're near the top in the baseball. The Italians love to play the game. There is a lot going on there. They have that Italian league is probably one of the best in European baseball. But that's the country that you would think would be up and coming. But I have to tell you, I was just in Italy visiting my family this last winter, and when I talked to them about baseball, they just kind of shake their heads. they'd rather drink wine and eat cheese, I think.
And that's why we like Italy. You know, they just wake up and have gelato and figure out where the next pizza is coming from. Very good. All right, the professor, that's in my world traveling here. The professor is with us. Leaving this one more thought on it. 1.6 billion in Africa. The African athletes in basketball and football have been tremendous impact athletes. You know, to play baseball, and you know, as a kid, you get a ball and a bat and a glove and some rocks and a field, and that's the way you learn how to play baseball.
Yeah.
I would think, and you're a man who understands the administration of baseball, that baseball is always looking for cheap labor. You know, that's the asset of the company is the labor, and if you can get top players, young players, you
right.
don't have to, you know, pay them a lot. So it seemed to me that's a continent where they would be just going crazy trying to promote baseball.
Well, you know, to your point, obviously the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and all these countries have taken to the sport. Cuba, obviously. But, you know, it's probably the infrastructure in Africa. You know, I've never been there. I'm sure, you know, it has to be coming out of a city like South Africa and not in the countryside.
Right.
Because baseball, you need equipment. You need certain things. Yeah. You need fields. And I probably don't have the money and the facilities for those things. So it's a little harder for these kids to probably get to play the game or anything that's organized. Obviously, soccer, right? You just need a ball, and they're playing soccer. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. But to your point, if they did find a way to introduce baseball and have the facilities and let these kids play, we'd see a lot more players from Africa. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, good point, though. The structure, the infrastructure has a lot to do with it. All right, we'll take a break. The professor is with us. Gillespie made a heck of a play last night, getting the Solarte at the plate. There was a double steal attempt last night. I want to talk to you about that. The right guy handled the ball. We had a great slide over Yadier Molina. I don't know if you saw that. It looked like something out of the Olympics where a guy, Coughlin, went over Yadier Molina. He did a somersault over him to get to the plate. So we got a little bit of baseball to talk to the professor about, and we'll do that when we come back.
Talking to these little leaguers at 10, so I want to make sure I get the lineup up.
All right, back here with the professor in the bunker as we chat a little bit about baseball. Well, last night a couple of things happened. One, there was an attempted double steal to the plate. And the throw went to Panic. Why don't you break it down for us? Because you guys handled it perfectly. Posey made the play coming in.
Yeah, well, you know, they're a team over there that they're playing, trying to play an exciting brand of baseball. You know, they're running a lot. They're trying different things. So we were aware that, you know, this is something that they might try. But, you know, what made the play was Joe Panic, obviously, and Buster Posey with the two perfect throws. But, you know, the positioning of the infield is very important when you have a double steal like that. For the fact is, if the infielder's too deep and the guy at first steals and he's on the run, getting to second base, you know, getting there at the last moment just to tag the base stealer, he's not going to be able to come meet the ball in front of home plate and gain some more time on that return throw. So, you know, Joe was in good position. He was a little shallower than normal because we talk about, you know, getting there early. So if that runner does break, the first thing it does getting there early, it lets you see the play develop opposed to being a rush to get to second base. And the second thing, it allows you to catch the ball in front of second base closer to home. And, you know, the guy at third took off immediately.
Yeah, he
you
did.
Know, there was no peak. As soon as the catcher came up, he took off, and Joe executed it perfectly. And as I said, Buster's throw makes it a little easier. He hit Joe right in the chest and two perfect throws, and that was an exciting play, you know, a baseball play on the offensive side, but even more exciting when you throw the guy out at home plate for me.
Well, it was great because Chacin was up. You know, and he's not a very good hitter, so
right.
They probably figured, all right, let's try this. And I thought maybe they wanted Arroyo to handle the ball, you know. And was it a planned play? I mean, of course, the righty is up, so maybe Panic takes the throw anyway. But why is Arroyo not in that play?
Well, it's you know, interesting you bring that up because it was first thing. It's a tough call for Joe. You know, we talked about it because you have a right-handed pitcher hitting, and it's a fastball away. And most likely, if he does swing, he's probably going to hit the ball to the right side of the field. But Joe felt that, you know, he was ready for the play and rolled the dice and felt good about him because of his positioning where he was at. Now, if Arroyo takes the throw, which you can because it was a fastball away, it made a little bit tougher for him. He was a different angle. I think Joe was thinking the play all along. And that's why Joe rolled the dice and said, hey, I'm going to take this throw and roll the dice here. So he did do it, you know. And from their side, you hear a lot of people say, oh, you got the pitcher up. Now he's leading off the next inning.
Right.
Why would you double steal?
Right.
You know, I don't know. I've always felt if you have a chance to score a run, so what's your best chance to score a run there? With the pitcher driving him in? Or trying a double steal.
Yeah.
So he leads off the next inning, you have one out, but you got a chance to push a run across the board there. So they wanted to go on the aggressive side, and good baseball play all the way around.
No, I agree 100%. 100% with it. I said Chacin's up, he's not getting a hit. And here, you know, you make the play, you force the defense to do it, and it was a perfect, I thought defensively it was a perfect play.
It was, and it was, you know, we work on that in spring training quite a bit. Those are some of the fundamentals that we do, and, you know, as you said, it took a heads-up player like Joe Panic to be in position to start with, anticipating that play, and the two good throws by Buster and Joe to just get him at home plate.
Very nice. All right. Gillespie made a heck of a play last night. Now, Solarte, I guess, went on contact because the ball was hit to the corner. You know, it's a third baseman. And Gillespie had no play other than to go to the plate. He had, had no shot for a double play or anything like that. So is Solarte, does he do the right thing? You know, because you want to break up the double play if the ball's hit, you know, and make him go after you if it's first and third. But the way the ball was hit, and Gillespie had his momentum to the plate, threw a strike to the plate, and they got Solarte at the plate.
Yeah.
But is that, did Solarte do it correctly, and Gillespie really had no other play?
Well, no, he didn't. That was his only play. Well, what do you like to do in those situations? Gillespie was positioned in a spot to where, you know, if the ball's hit hard, he's going to go for two. If it's hit slow, he's going to go home. So he was in the right spot to be able to make that play. Now, as a runner at third, you know, you're typically told, hey, on a hard hit ground ball, you're going, because they're going to turn two. But on a ball that, a slow hit ball, a ball where they can't turn two and you cannot score, that means a number to the pitcher, a swinging bunt like you saw, you need to stay at third base.
Yeah.
But that can be a tough read sometimes. So, you know, he probably felt it was hit slow enough where he could score. And those are the decisions that, you know, the runner has to make on his own. The third base coach will let him know, look, hard hit ball, double play ball, you're going. You know, ball hit softly where you can't score and they can't turn two, you need to stay. And that's a key, where you can't score. So he felt he could make it. And Connor made a nice play.
Yeah, he did. He made a great play. And I watched it on the replay, and Solarte didn't hesitate. I mean, he didn't get a great secondary. I mean, he was just sort of standing still when he took off. But he read it right away. He said, yeah, it's a number. I'm going.
Right.
And look, they have trouble scoring runs anyway.
Sure. You know, you anticipate a low-scoring game. Try to figure this game out, huh? You're in our ballpark. You anticipate a low-scoring game, and there's runs all over the place.
Yeah. All right. So that was pretty interesting last night. I thought it was a good play. Early in the week against the Dodgers, an interesting play to end the game. When Posey picks Turner off at second base. Now, I thought Dwayne Kuiper did a great job of describing. I don't know if you heard it on the
radio. No, I did not.
I happened to hear it. And he said, look, it's a 3-1 pitch to Gonzalez. It's right down the middle. And you figure Gonzalez is either going to foul it off or put it in play. And Turner wanted to get the jump.
Right.
You know, and he went much too far. But from the base runner's perspective, was Turner that bad in getting caught in no man's land with Gonzalez up and seeing the pitch? You know, because you anticipate what's going to happen. Or was it something, look, you can't get caught off here, pal. I don't care what's going on. You better stay in a... Because Posey could have actually, if that was Samardzija, he could have run at him and probably tagged him. That's how far off he was.
Yeah, well, like you said it correctly. He's trying to get a good jump because it's the go-ahead run in the game. So you want to anticipate the ball being hit and get that great jump, especially with two outs. You're leaning a little bit more. The only problem with it is for him is, you know, Crawford's positioned right behind second base. You know, it's not like he's playing straight up. So he's in an easier position for that back pick, which we don't do a lot of. So, you know, when you're a runner at second base, your first thought is, I need to score on a hard hit ball and a base hit. So you're fighting to get that lead. So I tip my hat to Buster and Craw for putting that on, because where Craw was at, you know, he could get to that position easily without having to give up where he wanted to play. So, yeah, you can't get picked off in that situation. But it's a case of the runner doing everything he can to get a good jump to score.
Yeah, and figuring Gonzalez is up and, you know, he's going to at least put the bat on the ball.
Sure.
And that's what Dwayne explained. I hadn't thought of it that way, that as, you know, because look, if you're an outfielder, you know, or you're a shortstop, you shift guys all the time. If the pitch is in a certain spot,
right,
you anticipate, well, the ball, if it's hit, it's going that way. And look, Willie Mays, all the great, they would lean that way and get that first jump. And I think that's maybe what Turner was thinking, but it caught him.
Yeah, 3-1 count. You know, you don't see the pickoffs in a 3-1 count as much as you do in, you know, earlier in the count or a different hitting count. So big play for us, big play.
Did you see the slide over Yadier Molina?
No, you were describing it during the break. I didn't see it. I've seen guys do it before, jump over the catcher. Yeah, I'll go take a look at it. But, hey, you got to get to home plate one way or another. So I'm looking forward to taking a look at that play.
I think Yadier Molina is a Hall of Fame player. I don't care what he hits. I don't care how it ends up. This guy is the quarterback of the game. And I just think the guy's terrific.
He is. You know, I had a chance to get to know him a little bit in the All-Star games that we were able to coach because of winning the World Series. And when you play St. Louis, you know, the first thing you say is, watch out for Yadier Molina. That's it. The base runners are on high alert. He'll pick you off if you're getting too big of a secondary lead. And the other thing is he shuts down the running game. So number one, right away, you know you're not going to steal a lot of bases because that's how impactful he is to the game. Then the other side of it, to where I agree with you, is a Hall of Fame player, which is no statistics. It's not in the stats where people can vote on it, but he runs that pitching staff. You know, talking to the coaches over there, he knows the game plan. He takes charge of those pitchers and their game calling, and he is the best I've seen behind the plate running that game and doing that job. So in my book, I'm with you, Marty. Those things are intangibles that don't show up in the statistics.
Yeah, Cardinals are getting better. Their starting pitching is coming around. Lance Lynn is pitching better. I think we got the Cardinals in May. I think they're here.
Well, they're a class organization, you know, and it's not how you start, it's how you finish, right? Yeah. So, you know, they're going to figure it out. They have resources over there. They're not going to let the club just struggle and struggle. They're going to do what they can to right the ship. So you expect that from the St. Louis Cardinals.
So the last play for him, you know, a runner, I think it was the Phillies. I think it was the Phillies they were playing. First and second, and now a walk. So now the bases are now loaded. So the runner goes to third base and touches third and just sort of takes a step or two off. Molina never threw the ball back to the pitcher. Mm. He held the ball. Guy takes two steps off third just to get his bearings. Okay, let's see what's going on. Boom, picked off. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, right. I remember seeing that play. You know, it's fun to watch players with game awareness that are trying to get an edge and do something other than just, you know, the regular, okay, I'm in position to field. They're looking for a way to get out of the inning and to do something like that. So that's the type of player he is.
Who does that for you?
Well, we have, you know, a lot of guys that, we talk about it all the time. You know, the pickoff that Buster and Kraw pulled off in that situation is an example of just the thing that we're talking about. If the other team gives you an opening, you want to try to take advantage of it. But it's being in the moment. It's caring about the wins and losses, that gets you to, try these things. So, those are great plays to watch.
I know you got to run. I think Crawford does it. I think he does it. He's always looking. He's always lurking somewhere.
Sure.
I think he does it very well. Last thought for you. On a tag play, Arroyo, on the steal attempt, didn't get the glove down right away. He was safe. And then the runner took like two steps off the bag.
Yeah.
Arroyo has to learn. In the, you know, Chop and Sean and you guys are on this like crazy. Always keep the glove on the guy. Never let it up.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And that comes with experience. You know, that's something that we talk about in the spring with video replay. You know, we get the infielders together and everybody's aware, with the replay today that you have to keep the glove on the guy. And I think, in that instance, he was, you know, so concerned about slapping the tag down, and it's your natural instinct to, you know, once you slap it down to pull it away because it's a quicker tag. But the replay has changed the game. And if you notice the next guy that stole, he did keep the glove on the player. And, you know, that's what I like about this kid. You know, everybody's going to make a mistake or miss a ball, but this kid's going to make an adjustment and do something about it the next time. It probably won't happen twice. So I was happy to see that.
How do you like the lights that come on in the seventh inning, the cell phone lights, the rally thing?
Yeah, it'd be better if we contributed to the rally a little bit more, but I like it. I think it's unique here to San Francisco. I don't know if they've done it anywhere else. I know the umpires were complaining a couple nights ago that the third baseman couldn't see. There was one camera down low. The light was on, and Turner was Justin Turner was complaining about his vision with that light behind. But so the umpires had some concern with that. But they said, "What are you going to do? Tell 40,000 10,000 people to turn off your lights. There'd be more lights on if you try to do that. So they were in a little bit of a quandary there, but I like it. You know, I think it's unique, and it's interesting how, you know, it's not the wave, how things, all these things pop up over the years where something new comes into play. It's a good visual out there on the field.
I love it. I think it's great. Imagine being in Brooklyn with the fireflies in the summer night, sitting on the stoop in Brooklyn talking stoop ball.
Yeah, you get the mason jar, you're putting them in the mason jar.
Did you do that?
Oh, yeah, we did that growing up. What else were we doing? We're out in the country. You got to find something to do.
Put the holes in the top of the jar, and by the next morning, they're all dead.
Yeah.
That was it. All right, well, have a good game today, and I appreciate you being on.
Good being with you, Marty.
All right, take care. That's the professor, Ron Wotus, on Sunday morning. More coming up in the Sports Leaders.